Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructed Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, the man who is not Gacy Bloodworth and yet is here while a co-host is missing, Michael Hinderocker.
Yeah, this seems mostly backwards. Like, I think I'm the one who's supposed to miss shows.
Yeah, it's...
But also, how's it going? And, hey, what's up? Don't want you to miss that, you know.
So you had to do both of them under contract?
Yeah, that's the deal. They both have to get set every week.
And you obligatory had to do both of them.
I mean, I didn't want to get sued for breach of contract.
Yeah, I mean, Casey would definitely
it's
sue
serious.
You for this. Yeah, it's a serious issue. I agree. So this week was supposed to be our set review show, and Casey and Michael both went to the GP in Louisville, and neither of them were going to get back before, but like, in basically, we, Michael has a job, Casey has a job, I have a job, and like, we do the podcast at a certain time on Mondays, and there was not going to be a time in which we could record the set review. So we're bringing you a different episode this week with just me and Michael.
That's probably pretty disappointing. So, you know, if you're mad, like, I understand, but keep listening.
I actually think that you and I will have very different points of view on this topic.
Probably, yeah.
So I actually think it'll be a really good episode.
Yeah, I mean, you know, hopefully it won't be like, you know, a super grudge match or whatever, but...
And you know who will never have a grudge match with you is Oasis Games. You can check them out at oasisgamesslc.com. You can check them out at mtgoasis.com. You can get 15% off of your first order by using code CCMTG at checkout. And you can get 4% off of every order by using code WouldThatBeGood at checkout. They're just an amazing place to buy cards. I actually still have cards of theirs in my backpack. I just realized this as I was saying this, and I should probably return them.
Yeah, I actually have cards of theirs in my backpack too, so, you know.
Well,
team.
Are you going there tomorrow?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going there tomorrow. I'll race you to return the cards, I guess.
I mean, what time are you supposed to get there?
Cause, like, it doesn't matter. I have to go there to send out some of the card of the weeks and stuff for the listeners. So.
I mean, given that I'm working there, like, I'll probably beat you there.
Well, probably. That seems likely. So are you saying that I get like a... Like it's a golf score where, like, I get a handicap?
No, I'm saying, like, everything's a competition, and I'm a winner.
And you just win by default? Okay. Well, you should check out Oasis Games. They're an amazing place to buy Magic cards. Like, they also pay Michael's paycheck, and, like, I love them. So, yeah, it's a win-win. You should also check out the Patreon page. You can go to patreon.com/ccmtg to become a patron of the show, starting at $1 per month or more. Anything that you see fit, we really would appreciate. We did actually hit our goal to continue the monthly extra episodes. So I think what we'll do this month is we'll just record and talk about our Pro Tour testing.
That's sweet, though. Like, I really like the extra episodes, and I hope that the people who are patrons and get to listen to them do, too, because it's really fun. We have a good time. I mean, we always have a good time recording the podcast, but it's just, like, super casual. And
yeah, we just get to talk about, like, what we're playing, why we like it, and, like, why everybody else sucks at Magic.
Yeah, it's more just, like, BSing about Magic and less, like, recording a podcast.
Yeah, so we'll probably do one on the decks that we're testing for the Pro Tour. So if you want to hear that episode, go to patreon.com/ccmtg. And this month, you'll get to hear the Pro Tour testing episode, really. You know, just any amount that you see fit, and we really appreciate it. So let's go into our first segment on the show. We have #AlwaysImproving. We believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse, and #AlwaysImproving is your way of, like, always reminding yourself to be trying to improve. I think that something that's really hard is to remember that there's really not a flat line. Like, you really can't plateau in Magic. When you look at, like, the best players in the world, you look at, like, PV. Like, he just sucked at the Pro Tour for, like, multiple years. Came back with a vengeance. Got his 10th Pro Tour top 8. Like, I think he got his 8th, 9th, and 10th Pro Tour top 8, like, all within a year and a half. And in between that, like, his 6th and those Pro Tour top 8s, he actually just sucked. Like, he didn't care. He wasn't trying. And I think that a lot of people think that you can really hit this, like, oh, I can't actually get better than this. I just don't believe that's true. I think that you're always getting better or you're always getting worse.
I mean, the thing is, if you're, like, actively great, you know, like, you have your 6th PT top 8 or whatever, like, you can slip off a little bit and still be pretty damn good. But, like, Yeah, you don't just stay the same, right?
You can go from like winning every FNM you play in to like, oh man, I like 2-1 or 3-1 a lot of these FNMs. Like, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah, I mean,
it's the same thing at a different level. I understand what you're saying because like PV would probably just go and like just destroy any PPDQ he played in.
Right, right. So like what I'm saying is like you can get worse, but you can only get worse relative to how you are before. It's not like you're like resetting and starting from scratch.
Absolutely, but I think the same thing is true. It's definitely not a, well, I'm good enough now, so I'm just going to be this good forever kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you're like super elite, awesome at Magic, like you're probably never going to be awful at it, but you can definitely get a lot worse than you are.
So how did you improve at Magic this week?
So I kind of had last second cold feet, and this is mostly because I am an idiot and didn't like stop playing games with Sneak and Show and forgot why I liked it, and then played a bunch of other decks and thought some of them were good. So I almost like, you know, pulled an idiot move and played something else at the last second. And instead I just played Signature and things mostly went pretty well. I played one matchup that was abysmal. I lost once to another matchup that seemed pretty terrible that I hadn't really played much, but you know, that's what happens when you play formats you have no experience in. I lost to Seth Manfield and I very narrowly lost my last round for 11-4 and some cash.
I'm so confused as to what did you do to improve?
So like, just playing the deck that I knew was the best choice for me. So I had this like really strong urge to
switch to Bug,
to just play something else. And I think that deck would have been good, but I think I likely would have let it down.
Okay.
So I think just like understanding
how did you come to that decision? Like, what did you do that led you to, you know what, I probably just shouldn't play Bug Delver, which is, I believe, that was the deck you were thinking.
Yeah, and that deck did really well this weekend. Like, I think metagame-wise, that deck was great.
Yeah.
But like, I played a lot of matches with Sneak and Show, and it's kind of a high variance deck in general. So like when you lose, it just feels bad because you know you draw your like fourth Emrakul or whatever and don't have anything to do with it.
It's like maybe it's some kinda, of the Marvel decks.
Yeah,
in standard.
Yeah. Like when you're losing, it just feels bad. So I had a couple of like pretty bad leagues, but I had a lot of really good leagues too. So I don't know. I stopped playing it for about a week before because I felt like I wasn't getting a whole lot out of each match. Like, the value in playing, you know, 100 more matches with it was just pretty minimal compared to trying to play other things and making sure it was what I wanted to play. So I played some other things that I liked okay, but not well enough to switch. And then at the end, I just sort of ran out of time and audibled back to Sneak and Show, but then was just having cold feet with it. So I think just, like, saying, this is good enough, I'm locking in, I'm not going to sabotage myself.
I think that something else that happened this weekend, which I think is pretty important. So there's the difference between a 1-point finish and a 2-point finish as far as pro points when you are trying to chase silver. It's actually a pretty big deal.
It's huge. Like, one is basic. I mean, one is a lot better than zero, right?
Oh, like, but just by infinite, right? Infinitely better than zero.
Right. It is a
unless
finish.
You already are maxed out on ones.
But the thing is that, like, if you don't have... So you can only, for those of you who don't know, you can only use 6 GP finishes. So right now, I am using, I think, 3 twos. So I really need probably 2 threes. So getting one of them this weekend would have been nice, but...
Well, I mean, so you're using... What are your actual GP finishes, just so that they can understand?
11-4...
But in points.
2-2-2.
So you're only using 3 of your... I think it's 5 GP slots, by the way.
It's 6.
Is it 6?
It is 6.
I might go to more GPs this year.
Yeah, so basically, I'm going to need to either have 2 3-point finishes and use all 6 slots with the others being 2s,
or I'm going to need to play at least 2 3s and keep your 2s.
Right, right. So if I'd gotten a 3, it would have been nice because it would have been like 100% that slot would be one I would use. Right. That's basically the difference.
What you're trying to say here is that a 3 is worth... Well, this is just a slot that's like locked in.
Right, whereas a 2, like there's some chance that I could end up with 7 2s.
That you bounce a 2 out. And what's important here is a couple of things. So every Pro Tour is worth 3 points
minimum. 3.
And then what you're really looking for is about a 5 on a Pro Tour.
Well, if you can get like 1-5, you can have all 2s for your GP slots, because that would put you, if you have 2 PTs played, so I have 3 from the first PT, and if I could get 5 from the second one, 6 2-point GP finishes would lock me for silver.
Right, which would qualify you for another Pro Tour this year and a Pro Tour next year.
Right, and those invites are deferrable, so it takes a lot of the variance out of individual events, basically. Right.
So when you get like a good GP finish, which, by the way, twos are good GP finishes. I know that like you're downplaying them right now, but the fact that, like, for example, Danny has already got a 1, a 1, a 1, a 1, and a 2, right?
Something like that.
Yeah, so like he's now... ones just basically don't matter for him at this point.
Right.
Whereas for you, if you can get a good Pro Tour finish... maybe get a Danny style finish at a Pro Tour where you get like
eight points.
8 points, qualify for another Pro Tour. It actually just means that all of your ones matter.
Right.
So it's a huge thing that you actually got another two, right? Like your GP finishes have been very consistent. And I actually think that's your real always improving moment is like, you know, in multiple formats,
so,
you've been able to...
I mean, the thing is I'm just like actively not good at Legacy. And I think I did a good job of recognizing that. And just playing a deck that allows me to do what I'm good at, which is I can figure out what hands to mulligan. I can cast Ponders when I, you know, I'm looking for either a Show and Tell or an Emrakul.
The smile on your face right now is so big.
it's just like, it's. I mean, you play some tough games, and I'm not going to say that I didn't play like any well or anything, but a lot of your games are very much like, well, I had Ancient Tomb, Lotus Petal, Show and Tell. I put in Omniscience and hard cast Emrakul.
So when you like, let's say that you don't hit silver this year. Like, let's say that the season ends, you're, like, a point short. Are you going to look back on your two finishes and, like, be disappointed?
Certainly, mainly because I played two really close round 15 matches. This is the second GP where I've narrowly lost a game three
where
for
you would have gotten another
3.
Pro point.
And that would be really hard to swallow.
It's so interesting that, you know, for me, like, 2 years ago, getting my first pro point is so important. And then... now, as I enter this year, I didn't get to go to the first Pro Tour. I'm not going to go to the second Pro Tour. So the Pro Tour season for me, the year, unless I like
you would basically
top
have
eight
to,
a GP, like the season's basically
you might have
over
to win a GP.
Yeah,
I don't know that a top eight would even be good enough. Top
exactly.
Only
so
four.
Like the year's over for me, but I do plan on like hitting GPs hard starting next season. So I like. But when I look at, so I'm like kind of living vicariously through my teammates like you, Casey, and Danny, who all got to qualify for the first Pro Tour, which is basically the biggest thing you can ask for. And one of the things that I'm learning here is just kind of like, you know, it's interesting for us, right? Like in this podcast, we've gone from we're trying to qualify for Pro Tours, you know, me, you, Quentin, Casey, like we've all done it, right? Danny on my other podcast, you know, Drew, Sammy, Travis, like all of my co-hosts for the most part outside of Matt and Manny have just done, been able to do that. And, you know, we've also all tried to get our first pro points and now we're transitioning. Like it's a transition period where we're actually trying to get into the Pro Players Club. Like some number of us are, that's actively a goal of ours. And it's funny that like, You like, for example, you split in like $250 this weekend, but that's actually not as important to you as the pro points actually are.
No, like
you actually would have rather had the pro points than the money.
Happily, like it was unfortunate. I played someone in the last round who's basically in the same position as me. He, you know, he doesn't have silver, but he's playing in, he's qualified for Dublin. He played the first PT. I mean, we probably had like, you know, within like one or two pro points of each other.
Right.
And it hurts to lose a match like that because
both of you have the game this huge... It's basically like a GP that's locked in for your spot.
Right.
Through... I think the season ends in...
End of August.
Yeah, I was gonna say fall, so it's the end of summer. So you have just so much room to gain these points. And, I'm really proud of you. I know that, like, this two sucks for you now, but it's three GPs. I think you played in three GPs, have three twos, so, like, you have a lot of room to, like, gain points in there.
Yeah, I think the only...
Oh, no, you played in Portland.
I didn't day two Portland, but my strategy has basically been...
Can I give you my point from Portland?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that I don't think a one is even going to be good enough to matter. Like,
well, it just
realistic,
depends on your Pro Tour finish.
Yeah, it would take a good PT finish. But if I have a good PT finish, it'll likely just qualify me for the third PT, and then that'll get it there on its own, more or less.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's the hope.
I do know that a lot of people do get silver. For example, Oscar Jones got silver off of ones a lot of time. Like, he got silver twice, and ones were involved on that. For me, I played in a tournament that you and Alex were qualified for. Actually, the only two people that didn't show up for this Game Grid Invitational were you and Alex.
Yeah, so I thought about playing this, and Alex and I talked about it a little bit, but, like, I mean, Alex really wants to play Pro Tours. He's definitely, I mean, I think at one point he played 13 Pro Tours in a row. But he knows what he wants. I know what I want, and Game Grid Invitational, as great as it is, just doesn't offer me that.
And the thing is that hopefully the Game Grid Invitational series gets to the point of, for example, the Star City Invitational Series, where it actually does grant Pro Tour invites one day. And that should be the goal, and hopefully one day it does that, right?
Yep.
You know, a great example of this is, you know, during during the States tournament that you won for the Star City Games, and the Star City Games, people were like, oh, no, I'm playing in PBTQs that weekend. I'm like, what are you talking about? The Star City Games State Championship is a PBTQ. And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, yeah, you qualify for an invitational, which is an RPTQ.
Well, PTQ.
It
awards one slot.
Whatever.
Right.
No, that's true.
But sort of the same idea. Yeah.
Right.
Point taken.
Yeah, and the thing is like the Game Grid Invitational is like this huge thing that should be taken very seriously among Utah Magic players. So for me, one of the things that I try to do is like really. I really try to test for this. I haven't taken Magic very seriously in the last year, and with the start of 2017, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to do this. And I picked a very good standard deck. I really liked my list. I actually wouldn't change a single card in it. Now Emrakul is banned, so you know some of that might change. And then I just kind of trusted my teammates on my Modern deck, and you know I drafted a very good, probably one of the best three decks at the draft table. I got a little bit unlucky. And just overall did well. My preparation for the tournament, I did everything I could to prepare, and I haven't done that in a while, so it's been pretty cool. The other thing that I've been doing to hashtag always improving is, you know, Magic is something that is done sitting down a lot. So, you know, I do have goals to start working out a lot more. I plan on playing basketball with Michael, and hopefully we can get some other people involved. But, you know, I increased my workout by 33% today because of a comment my wife made. So, like, a lot of things going on in my life to, like, be hashtag was improving. And, you know, before this podcast is over, I mean, it's likely that in the next 24 hours I'll get an email for a contract to sign, and I'll be leaving my job, too. So 2017 is going to be very interesting for me.
That's sweet. I think with, like, prep, it's good for even for like lesser tournaments to sometimes basically treat them like they're, I mean, there's a lot of cash value at the Game Grid Invitational. It's a really good event.
It really is. I didn't actually say this, but I did actually end up top eighting, 3-0ing standard, doing well enough to make top eight. And actually now I get to go to GP San Jose. I'm just using the money to just go straight to another tournament.
Right. So that's sweet. And like, I think just taking GP or taking just like an event prep like that sometimes, it sort of helps you practice a little bit. Cause I think you need to like practice for your practice. I know that sounds kind of weird, but you need to figure out like what methods are most effective for you when you're trying to like choose a deck, figure out what you like, how do you like to test formats, what works for you. Because some people really like playing with their friends. Some people just, you know, I mostly these days I'm just grinding Magic Online leagues with the decks I'm interested in. But it's just about finding what works for you. Because I think whatever, you know, helps you perform the best, once you sort of know what that is, you can really sort of put that knowledge away and continue to use it in the future.
All right. So I completely agree with everything you said. I think that treating, and this is actually one of the things that we kind of talked about a few weeks ago, which is, you know, let's say that there's a high value event, like the Oasis Games winner boxes are really high value, right? For example, if they get enough people, every 4-0 wins $80 store credit or a box. That's pretty high value. That's like, and what happens is what that does is it draws in players that like you said about standard leagues are like willing to bet money that they're like better at Magic than you, right?
Right. Or yeah, like they're just going to play seriously. They're going to take
exactly. Yeah. So one of the things that you like what you've said is, how do I take my preparation for even something as small as a standard league, and help it catapult me towards an SCG Open, a GPT, something like, you know, whatever it is that you're trying to do, and really push yourself. And I think that the Gamebird Invitational, I don't know why I wanted, I think that it was just like, I just wanted to do well at like my next event. You know, watching my friends like you and Danny qualify for the program, like, you know, like, I just have conceded in the finals and like dropped out of top eights of PBDQs, but like I really just want to do well at a Magic event. And so I did take that opportunity to prepare and like get ready for this one. And yeah, it's really awesome that I get to go to a GP that I wouldn't have gotten to go to otherwise if this event didn't exist. So, but every week on the podcast, we invite a listener or one of our patrons to ask any question they see fit to just add a topic to the podcast. And this week we have Mason who asks, do you see, this is a response to the change.
This being the bannings that came out this morning.
Yeah. This being a change to the current standard rotation leading to another 6 months of future interactions with these cards, or is Wizards of the Coast just in its mind, just changing its mindset? Do you feel like Wizards of the Coast should take more risks in R&D if they have been more liberal with the ban list, or do you feel like they need to maintain the course and they just had a few slip ups? So, the episode of today is actually about the ban list. So we're going to talk about standard and modern. What I specifically want to answer in Mason's question is, should, with some of the updates that happened today, should Wizards change how they've been doing things? So this is the first standard banning since Jace the Mind Sculptor. And I have a lot of thoughts on it. I think that every card that was banned had a reason to be banned. Without question. I think that with that, I think the standard form was fine. So the question is, should Wizards be more aggressive in designing cards now?
I think, you know, both of the, so two of the three cards that got banned were very aggressive designs and one was an oversight. Reflector Mage is like, they just didn't think that card would be as good as it is.
No, there's no way that you could possibly think that this Mana War would be like oppressive.
It's just very clear they just didn't quite. I mean, they talked about that as like a limited card.
I didn't even think it would be standard playable when it was like, it's just like a Mana War. Like, it's whatever.
And it's more a casualty of the other things getting banned, I think, than being banned on its own power level. Like, it's more like, we want to shake this up, and we know, like, what the best deck is if we ban cards from other best decks, so also Reflector Mage, sorry. To me, Smuggler's Copter, so when you invent, like, Smuggler's Copter reminds me of Umezawa's Jitte. Like, when you invent a new card type, or Skullclamp, when you invent a new card type, sometimes you just go too far. You don't know how to balance
and
them.
That might
and
be true
just,
still. There might be vehicles. So there's two new vehicles in the next set that are legitimately crazy.
Right. And that's just part of like pushing the envelope. It's going to happen sometimes. And I think Emrakul is kind of the same way. You don't really know like how much can you really push Delirium. And it's really hard in like future league testing or whatever where they're like, you know, 20 people.
Not only that, but they also have to test every card, right? So, like, cards that we would just discount and say, like, I'm never going to play this, they still have to build decks with.
And things change. So, like, maybe Vessel of Nascency did something different when they were playing, and that card never made their deck. So Emrakul always cost 9 mana instead of 7. Like,
an Emrakul. So I was playing green-red, and I had Artifact, Instant, Sorcery, Enchantment, Planeswalker,
Creature,
land.
So you cast it for like 6
mana. I cast Emrakul for 6 mana this weekend.
Right. Like, so it's a thing that happens.
Which,
and
by the way, when Emrakul was spoiled, I legitimately went into Oasis Games, talked to Matt Kling and Alex Sintner about this card, and was like, no, I think this card costs 7 mana. And they're like, it will never cost 7 mana.
Well, I thought it would usually be like 8 or 9, and the truth is it's really more like 7 or 6. And I think that Wizards probably didn't think it was going to cost 7 or 6 most of the time anyways, because like you just don't really want to, even with a pretty big deck building cost, a 13-13 Mindslaver is just like unequivocally worth 7 mana.
And it also just turned out that the deck building cost was like, I get to play Ishkana.
And Grimflayer.
Right.
It's like, oh no.
Which wasn't that big of a deck building
cost. Oh, so sad.
Yeah, I'm so unlucky that I get to play like these great cards that like are almost modern. Like, so, one of them is basically Thragtusk, and one of them is like a staple in modern.
I know when Shadows came out, I was like really hyped about Traverse the Ovenwald, and it basically did nothing for a long time. But I always felt kind of vindicated that like this card was actually as good as I thought it was.
Okay.
And it's like it's a card that Emrakul is just like best buddies with, right? Because you're like, well, I don't really want to play four Emrakuls in all my decks, but
you can play one.
I'm gonna play, you know, nine copies of it.
Yeah. So do you think that Wizard should take more risks in R&D?
Well, it's so hard to say. I mean, the worst thing that Magic can be is boring.
The worst thing that anything can be,
right?
Is boring.
I mean, that's just like so. I think you're priced into it. It's part of the job. Sometimes you take risks, and sometimes they're sweet, and sometimes they are, you know, oppressively problematic. It's how it goes.
So, one of the parts of this question is like, do you see another 6 months with these cards? And I'm very interested by this question for a few reasons. Is 6 months with cards too long? Like, so there's no way that's too long.
No, I think he's saying, so like when they changed the rotation schedule back, it added another 6 months to their timeline in Standard. And
so
if he's just wondering
actually,
that...
That's true. So I addressed this in my video this week. I did a Wednesday Night Warrior, and I said, Wizards didn't intend these cards to be on a 24-month rotation. They intended them to be on an 18-month rotation.
Yeah, so
and
it's...
So a lot of these cards are like... We're going to be okay, like, even if this is a little bit broken, like, it'll be okay. They're only in a Standard for 18 months. And cutting 6 months off of a card is, like, a big deal. If Jace the Mind Sculptor and Stoneforge Mystic had cut their lifespan by 6 months, they would have never been banned. Because they were banned with 3 months left.
Yeah, it's hard to say. In general, I kind of like the... So they updated it. So they're going to release like their first ban list update a little bit earlier, right?
You can't talk about this. This is the training grounds.
Oh, okay. I didn't. I guess. So we'll see exactly how things shake out. But
it's actually funny. I've been told by listeners not to do that. To tell you to, I've been told by listeners not to tell you to stop talking because it's a later part of the podcast.
I wasn't clear on the. Anyways, the. I'm interested to see what direction Wizards of the Coast goes, but it looks to me like they've given themselves a little more flexibility in like how and when they get rid of things. And I think what maybe they're seeing is that like you can't Standard Showdown a bad format. If people just don't like it, you can't like incentivize them to play with prizes. They just don't like it. It's like if I would rather do something else than play Magic. Better prizes don't make me want to play Magic more.
It's actually so funny because, honestly, this is, in my opinion, the best Standard format ever.
But I'm saying, like, it doesn't matter what I think or what you think.
That, and
this
that's
is
the
just...
thing. That's the thing that I learned is, like, and, you know, we're going to get into this week, during this podcast, but, like, I'm just so surprised.
I mean, I think the gameplay is generally pretty interesting, but... There are a lot of unfun cards in this Standard format.
That's true.
For better or worse.
Well, let's move on. So there's no card of the week this week, but if you want to be eligible for card of the week, you can go to patreon.com/ccmtg, become a patron of $3 or more.
The card of the week is Reflector Mage.
That's the thing is like the card of the week would probably be something like Emrakul or Reflector Mage or Smuggler's Copter because it got banned. But like you don't want those cards, so
can we send you a torn in half Reflector Mage?
Yeah, we'll sign it. You know, you can just like put it in like a shadow box. I don't know, but yeah, I think that
or in the garbage, whatever.
Yeah, but you know, one of our next goals is to do this every week, regardless. So we'll, like, we could have done a legacy card this week, and you could get some sweet, sweet value. So go to patreon.com/ccmtg, get to donate anything you see fit. If you do $3 or more, you can be eligible for card of the week, and we would really appreciate it. There's also going to be no power rankings this week. I thought about doing Legacy, but honestly, I think that, like, there's one thing you guys want to hear about, and we're just going to talk about
it. We're sort of in between on every other format, and, like, any other format power rankings just don't make any sense because those formats are changing.
Yeah. So let's go right into...
Like, double changing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's new set coming in and cards going away. But let's go right into this. So the Patreon... the Training Grounds is brought to you by Oasis Games. You can check them out at oasisgamesslc.com, mtgoasis.com, And we're just going to talk about what just happened today. And that's the banned and restricted updates. We're actually going to talk about standard and modern, because there were two huge updates in both forms. Three in one, two in another. And we're just going to kind of go through this. So we're going to start with standard.
Would you rather start with standard, or do you want to start with modern? Because I think modern is going to be more straightforward.
Whatever you want. I don't care.
I think we can get through modern and like...
Oh, let's do modern then.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, we can do modern right now. So the two cards that got banned in modern were Gitaxian Probe and Golgari Grave Troll. So the way that I want to break this down is, who did this help? Who did this hurt? And how do you feel personally? So we'll start with Golgari Grave Troll. So who did this hurt? People who own Golgari Grave Trolls. And I don't know. I think that when we were testing for modern PPTQs and we realized that Dredge was beating turn two Rest in Peace in the play, we knew something was wrong.
Yeah, it requires like ridiculously specific hate cards, not just hate cards. And it also completely invalidates like anything else that uses the graveyard, because you just get like obliterated
because
collateral damage.
So for example, like if you're beating our turn to Rest in Peace and you like I'm not even joking. Like, I think we beat a turn to Rest in Peace like three times in one night, and we're like, well, this is broken.
I mean, like three times out of four, right? Yeah. It was just like not even close
on the
to
play
being
specifically.
Good.
So like we never beat it on the draw.
I've beaten it on the draw plenty of times. If you just have like a Nature's Claim, or if you have any way to kill it.
Sure. Okay.
Cathartic Reunion, just like
I'm talking about that night in playtesting, like specifically.
Sure. But it's a problem, right?
Like, no, that's a problem. Like, it's like, it's this thing where it's like, well, I don't know why I would play any other deck. Like, I don't know how they beat me. If like a Rest in Peace, and the thing is that Rest in Peace beats so many other decks on the just like on the sideline, right?
Like, I mean, it's like better against, sometimes I feel like it's a better hate card against like Jundin Abzan than Dredge, because like Dredge, you try to slam it, but you have to mull for it, and if they just like keep a hand with Nature's Claim, you basically mull into nothing trying to find these hate cards, and then you just die to like you know, a very medium Dredge game where they don't actually, you know, do anything that impressive.
So with that being said, like, it definitely hurts people that own Golgari Grave Trolls. I think that
This is good for modern. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
we said the same thing at the same time.
Yeah. It's just a unfun deck.
One of the things is that people said is like, why did they do this? This won't kill Dredge. And I was like, I don't think they're trying to kill Dredge, dude. I think they're trying to stop it from beating the hate cards.
So what they're trying to say is like, if you want to play Dredge at FNM, sweet. If you want to play Dredge at a GP, be sure this is what you're signing up for. Right. I mean,
and Dredge has just been one of the most stupid mechanics in the history of Magic for a long time.
You basically opt out of playing Magic and instead opt into playing a different game called Dredge.
Exactly. Like, can you imagine being somebody who's like, you know what, I want to look at this Magic game on Twitch. And the thing that shows up is
like one person with their entire deck laid out, seemingly putting things into play at random, and then discarding their hand to burn out their opponent.
Yeah,
it just doesn't make it doesn't
makes
look
no
like
sense.
Magic. Yeah.
And this person's like, I don't know what just happened, but that guy got wrecked.
So the thing is that like Dredge, when it was introduced in Ravnica, given that I was like playing, you know, standard and like limited at that time, was mostly like, in limited, I recur my greater Moss Dog and sometimes mill over a Stinkweed Imp that I can also recur. That was Dredge, and it was like a real cost, because you would come close to milling yourself out if you dredged more than once or twice in a game.
And in Constructed, it's just been one of the most broken mechanics ever.
Well, yeah, but
it's actually what they cited. They were just like,
it's actually too good. It's so good that it's generally a bad deck, because you have to play hate for it or you literally can't beat it.
Yeah. And the other thing is like, when they were, it was so funny, when you're reading the article for like why they banned Golgari Grave Troll, they're like, Dredge has just always been a problem. Like, the funny thing is Golgari Grave Troll was banned like 8 months ago.
Yeah, and they were like, it's probably fine.
And
then
they're like,
printed,
no. Well, this is why we can't have nice things.
Sometimes you unban something, and I'm actually happy to see Wizards do this, and I hope that it makes them more willing to unban things in the future. Because, like, if you unban something and it's just, like, awful, just be like, maybe this was a bad choice.
We goofed. Sorry, guys. And the funny thing is, like, people are so willing to, like, attack Wizards. Like, how could you not test this and know this perfect information? And it's like, because they're like maybe 64 people and we're like 2 million people. I feel like there's a big gap there.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is too, like, you know, they probably were like, eh, people can play Leyline of the Void. Right? Yeah,
exactly.
I mean,
so the next,
they're not wrong.
They're not wrong. The next banning, there's no unbannings, which we'll get to, is Cataxian Probe. This is actually something that I don't think surprised a lot of people. I think that if we thought there was going to be a banning, I think a lot of people did actually think it would be Cataxian Probe.
It was kind of split between Probe and Becomeimence, right?
Yeah, so, and Probe makes a lot of sense.
So this, like, can we just, like, you know, sing taps for Death Shadow aggro? That deck is officially dead.
Oh, yeah? This just kills it?
Yeah, I mean, you really needed that card. Like, you need something. You need a cantrip that costs zero mana that deals yourself damage. Like, this card.
Street Wraith?
No, you already play four of those. No,
so
you needed Gataxian Probe. You would play Gataxian Probe over the same spell that was literally free and an instant. If it cost 0/0, like no Phyrexian mana, just zero, it would be much worse for Death Shadow.
I agree.
So that deck is like between this and Fatal Push, just straight unplayable. It isn't a deck.
I think that the banning of Gataxian Probe was actually great. I do wish that it came with an unbanning of either Preordain or Ponder. But other than that, I just think that the card was like, so, it's just stupid. It's just like a dumb card.
And this will hurt Infect some, but I think Infect can like still be a deck.
Oh, yeah.
Although Fatal Push will also be really good against Infect.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's just one of those cards that like Phyrexian Mana is a really stupid mistake. Like, pretty much every time they've ever tried to print a cost reduction mechanic.
The fact that I've ever considered playing, like, Aura Shards in a deck tells you how broken Phyrexian Mana is.
I've gotten gut-shotted before out of Merfolk.
Dude,
and gotten crushed by it.
I watched Matt Kling lose in the finals of a PPDQ to gut-shot out of Merfolk. And it was the biggest blowout in history.
I'm pretty sure it was the same PPDQ that I got gut-shotted out of the quarterfinals, so it wouldn't surprise me.
Was it?
It was it. I'm assuming, I mean, there can't be that many people playing Merfolk in
was
modern.
Was it a Spark?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. So, you know, Gutshot doing work. But like, Gutshot should be about the standard for how good a Phyrexian Mana spell can literally be. If you want to take two damage to deal a damage, like, sure, whatever. You can play your discard a card
but
hatred
instead,
for one.
But instead, Mental Misstep and Gataxian Probe exist. Which, by the way, why did Blue get both of those?
Just for value. Because one color is better than all the others, and we all know what it is.
Yeah, that's true. I have no problems with this. Who did this help? It helped anyone playing interactive strategies.
So I actually think this helps Tron. We were talking about this morning because we saw that ban restricted announcement go up while we were in the airport, and we were trying to figure out what cards we had to change buy list prices on for Oasis. So that, like, we wouldn't get, you know, mailed a whole bunch of crap that we didn't want.
Sure.
So in addition to just the cards that got banned, like, what cards get tanked by this? But I think Tron is actually helped by this a lot because it feels like you shift more. Like, the Black-Green X decks are getting new toys, and they might shift a little bit bigger. But
okay.
I just don't, like, Tron loses its natural predators. Like, if Infect is weakened and Black Green X is strengthened, right, because they get Fatal Push, which is, like, probably almost strictly better than Path to Exile.
I think that it's Vintage playable, where you would never play Path in Vintage, so.
I don't know how many Fetch Lands people are playing in Vintage, but, like.
They're playing all Fetch Lands in, like, three lands
sure.
that aren't.
Yeah, but, like, this card is clearly great. It's great against these fast decks. And, like, the more Black-Green X there is, I mean, those decks just, like, fundamentally can't beat Tron. Especially if they start playing a bunch of Fatal Pushes.
I think you kind of answered both questions. So, in the Who Does It Hurt section, you have, obviously...
Well, the deck that ceases to exist, it didn't hurt.
Death
Suicide
Shadow.
Zoo finally ran out of life points.
Yeah. or has too many.
Yeah, well, both at the same time. Metaphorically ran out, but, like, literally can't kill itself fast enough.
And you can't actually kill yourself fast. But like
it's a just, real problem.
Yeah, like you can't do it. It just takes too long. And then I think it does hurt Infect. And I think the thing that it does help is exactly what you talked about is like interactive strategies, whether it's Grixis or Jund or Naya or whoever or whatever you're trying to do to interact with your opponent, I think Ataxian Probe was like probably a problem for
you. It might help some of the like kind of bigger aggro decks, because I think those decks had pretty abysmal like aggro combo matchups, and they just nerfed the best aggro combo deck and killed the other two aggro combo decks.
So how do you feel about the bans personally in Modern?
These are both great to me. Like, they should slow the format down a little bit.
Which and both I think of these do.
Allow for more fair gameplay, hopefully. It's so hard to say. Modern is such a strange format. But I think this is a step in the right direction, which is recognizing that having like 11 different aggro combo decks isn't really like diversity.
Fun.
It's just different people playing different cards with the same plan.
The same plan, yeah. I completely agree with all of that. I do wish that like Bloodbraid Elf and Jace the Mind Sculptor at the very least had come off.
I mean, I'm pretty sure last time I advocated for Modern unbannings, I advocated for literally unbanning every single card except Mental Misstep. So, you know, I'm probably not in agreement with most people here. But
no,
I
just wish it would have been poetic that, like, the same day that we had standard bannings, Jace the Mind Sculptor came off of the Modern list. I just think that would have been great.
Yeah, I was like, unban Jace, unban Bloodbraid Elf, unban
Deathrite Shaman,
Stoneforge Mystic, Seething Song, Ponder, Preordain, all of it. Blazing Shoal.
Yeah, I'm okay with these bannings, and I see basically no problem with it. So let's go on to Standard. So we had three Standard bannings. We had... I actually can't believe I'm saying this. We had Emrakul the Promised End, Reflector Mage, and Smuggler's Copter. So week one of the Standard format, people actually called for the bannings of Smuggler's Copter, which was the most insane thing I had ever heard, week one of a format. By week five after the Pro Tour, we had people complaining about Reflector Mage.
People just complain about everything.
And asking
like...
for the banning. And then by, you know, 2 weeks ago... on this podcast, you and I had an argument about Emrakul.
Well, we both won. You wanted Reflector Mage gone, and I
wanted
Emrakul gone.
Hold on. Let's be very clear. I didn't want Reflector Mage gone. I just said it was the most unfun magic card of all time.
I think that speaks for itself.
No, that's... I don't love standard bannings. I think that standard bannings at large are just not great.
So,
I think it's a waste of bans.
I went from, like... not really that interested in Pro Tour testing to like really stoked on Pro Tour testing.
So I actually
in about
feel
20 minutes.
Yeah,
so.
I actually feel the same way. I feel like the whole team like tonight kind of is like all ready for Pro Tour testing,
like,
which I don't think any of us.
We were all like kind of down on it, and now we're all like, oh yeah, it's like a big set Pro Tour.
Yeah,
because we just banned all the best decks.
Yeah. So the thing. So
right?
Let's talk about
it's
this.
Like
let's
it's
talk
like
about
we just
this.
Rotated
so,
the format.
No, I actually am curious about this. So. Team Aetherworks was a deck at the last Pro Tour that played zero Emrakuls.
No, it played four Emrakuls.
No, Aetherworks?
Yeah. All the big team lists were playing four Emrakul, four Ulamog.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that they were doing that. That's so bad. Anyway, is Aetherworks still a deck after this banning?
I don't think so.
Okay. I think that it could be. It's just a very different deck.
I would lean no, but like... Well, the main thing is, like, if someone was like, hey, do you want to run back the deck you played at the last Pro Tour at this Pro Tour? I would just say no.
Right. And you played zero Emrakuls.
I think we played one
or
two.
Oh, you did play one.
But it's more like no matter how many ramp spells you play, it's just really hard to actually hard cast Ulamog. Like,
yeah.
It's nice. It's a nice thing to think about sometimes. And when it happens, you know, like once per tournament,
sure.
You're stoked on it. But it just – it's, like, really hard to get 10 mana. It's just a lot of mana.
So the next deck that you could talk about that got hurt by this is Green-Black Delirium. And did this deck get hurt by this?
Well, it has to be different.
That's my thought also.
I don't know where exactly it goes from here. I expect both Torrential and Verdurous Gearhulk to see a lot more play going forward.
Me too.
Because I think like your kind of mid-late game options... Just there's going to be a lot more diversity. I think
specifically both of those cards are really good examples of this too. Verdurous Gearhulk is like this thing where, like,
they're like both really
things
powerful,
just didn't
right?
matter, right? Like you're like, oh, that's cool. Like you put counters on a dude, like block it, play Emrakul, and then Torrential Gearhulk was like,
well, an 8/8 looks stupid versus a 13/13, right?
Right.
And counter spells just look stupid versus mind slavers.
Yeah, mind slavers. Yeah.
I mean, everything actually looks stupid versus Mindslavers. It's kind of remarkable how hard it is to really beat a Mindslaver. Sure. Especially when it has a 13-13. I don't know. Maybe that's just not surprising. I really don't think Wizards would have printed Emrakul if they thought he was going to cost
six
and seven mana.
Which is so funny
because
like, he was in standard for like 6 months before people broke him. So you would think that like...
Was he?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, so he top-8ed the first SCG Open and people still didn't realize how good he was.
So, I mean, it took a little while for the black-green decks to shift.
I believe that I said the card was busted and you and Casey and Manny all told me I was wrong.
So, I think the black-green decks, though, like, are basically the same from last standard. I think Bant Company gave you, like, something that was sometimes fast enough to just not care about it. Like, fast, you kind of go wide really fast and, sure. like, just beat that style of deck.
So, I'm actually curious. When you think of things that, like, the Emrakul banning, for example, helped, I thought of, like, Teemer Emerge. I thought of ramp decks. I thought of, like, I actually thought black-green Delirium, too. I was like, actually, I think that black-green Delirium gets better with Emrakul gone. Because, like, your entire game plan isn't about Emrakul.
They were only playing one, and, you know, they were totally invalidated by the decks that played four.
Yeah.
I was thinking this, I mean, this is going to sound kind of goofy, but I was thinking Metalwork Colossus.
I also thought that deck.
I have a couple of ideas that I want to try. I still haven't given up on that thing, and, like, we get some interesting artifacts.
Yeah, you and
in
Michael
Majors
should, like, form a club.
Yeah. The Michael... The Metal Mike Club. I don't think he wants to be anywhere near that club. That, you know, sounds mostly terrible for him. Because, you know, he has to associate with me or whatever. But
hashtag,
I really love Metalwork Colossus.
Hashtag Metal Mikes. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Can we be on a podcast? You and Michael Majors. Oh, my gosh.
I feel like Michael Majors would not want to be on a podcast with me, and I don't really blame him.
Just go win a Pro Tour, bro.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Yeah. I thought the same thing. I thought Metalwork Colossus was a huge... I mean, I think
that
I posted
card,
that on our...
That deck just, like, couldn't beat the card Emrakul before. You had to play Deadlock Trap, not really because it was even good in the deck, but because otherwise you literally could not beat the card Emrakul.
Yeah, I wonder if you'll still play
you,
Deadlock
right,
Trap,
so
though.
You might. Like, it's possible, but there's, like, the card that you literally could never beat it's just fine. Got banned.
Yeah.
So... First of all, a 10-10 is a lot bigger today than it was yesterday, right? There are no other 10-10s. There's nothing that kills you in combat.
I mean, Ulamog.
Okay, but, like, that's not... I don't expect to play against an Ulamog. I don't expect, like, 60% of the decks at a given event
sure.
to be playing main deck Ulamogs.
The next banning that we have is Smuggler's Copter, which is what we want to talk about next. So, what got help from this? So, obviously, Nissa's... Multiple Nissa's. I think both the 5-mana and 3-mana
in general.
Yeah, I think that like Liliana, 3-mana Nissa, 5-mana Nissa are specifically the ones that I thought about. Was like, oh well, these got way better.
3-mana Nissa in particular, I think, could be like actually good again. But I would say more than anything, just like diversity in aggressive strategies, like Smuggler's Copter. It's just, you know, when you don't know how good card types are, sometimes you print one that's just, like, a lot better than the rest, and Smuggler's Copter was just a lot better than any other vehicle.
One thing that I did think about also when I looked at this was, you know, where did this hurt? And one of the things I thought of it was, like, Madness probably, like, in design, Smuggler's Copter was a huge part of enabling Madness, and it's a lot harder now.
Yeah, I don't think Madness is really going to be a thing outside of very niche situations, but I also think pretending like Madness was really a thing before is sort of...
I mean, it was a top 5 deck, like, by stats.
Yeah, but I mean, calling that... So, that deck played Bloodhall Priest and Fiery Temper. I mean, that's those are the only...
Thing,
but those are the only Madness cards that saw play, and neither of them saw play in any other decks.
And here's the thing. Thinking about this, I thought, does Smuggler's Copter being banned stop those cards from seeing play in this deck? And honestly, maybe not.
Maybe not, but I don't know that deck is like... That deck needed the filtering of Smuggler's Copter because it was sort of playing more high upside, really low downside cards.
Well, the thing
like I don't know how many lightning axes you can play in a deck without Smuggler's Copter.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that need to be considered in going into this.
Or Bomad Courier, right? I mean, there's like a lot of cards like that in that deck.
The what does this help? So also before we talk about that, what does it hurt is easily Thraben Inspector. That card got so much worse with the banning of Smuggler's Copter.
Yeah, I am a little curious. We were messing around with a couple of things. Again, we were just kind of BSing and trying to brew decks while flying home from Louisville because, you know, we've been in the airport or on a plane for like the last 8 hours. But we were trying to some things, and like, I wonder if Revolt will make getting a clue from a one drop still a thing in some decks.
That could be true.
I also think human strategies might make a little bit of a comeback because I think Griff's Boon is a huge winner from this.
Sure.
And Thraben Inspector always saw play in those decks. But sort of the hyper-aggressive, you'll need to play probably a base white shell for a really hyper-aggressive deck these days.
Yeah. So what does this help? We said Planeswalkers. We said it hurt certain things.
Thraben Inspector and Madness specifically, yeah. I think, are like pretty reasonable.
So let's move on to the last card, and we can talk about the banning specifically. So Reflector Mage is gone. It's really funny. Twitter's reaction to this was a year too late, and it's like Reflector Mage was still pretty good in the standard format.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's sort of like if someone like punches you in the face and then slaps you in the face, the slap is like less bad than the punch, so it's like not that bad. Well, I mean, that's sort of the Reflector Mage story, right? It's like if you get like punched in the face by Reflector Mage a bunch of times and then, you know, he stops punching you and starts slapping you, you're sort of like, oh man, I'm glad he's slapping me these days instead of punching me.
It's actually just not. So one of the people on Twitter was like, I don't remember what they basically were like, how it was a year too late, and I was like, no, Reflector Mage basically runs like he's basically like the leader of the wise guys in like a crime syndicate. And the person was like, yeah, he's still running that crime syndicate from prison. And I'm like, no, like when you're banned in Magic, like you don't get to run anything anymore. And I think that perfectly describes Reflector Mage. Like, I mean, what was the most unfun deck in the last couple of years? It was easily Rally with Reflector Mage. Like, it just invalidated all the cards they printed to stop Rally. And then, you know, even though I thought that Green-White was, like, the most unfun deck by a lot, most people thought, you know, Collected Company. And the reason that they thought that was because of Reflector Mage. And then, even after Collected Company was gone, this stupid blue-white bad deck, like, continues to, like, destroy the format with... And the thing is I think that we kind of said this at the beginning, but Reflector Mage just never was meant to be what it was. It was supposed to be, like, this pretty cool limited card that, like, gained you a lot of tempo, and it turned out that, like, oh, actually, that's too good for Standard.
I think the second part of that ability is just, like, really hard to evaluate in a vacuum. And when cards are changing late in testing, like they said it was a 2-2 for a long time and then it became a 2-3. If it like died to everything in combat, I don't think it would have been nearly as good.
Yeah, if it was just a 2-2, actually, I think that the whole card would be different.
But it's just so hard to say, and like it's just the kind of card that it's not really about like percentages or even being oppressive. It's just because it's like a lot less oppressive in terms of how it makes you. It doesn't just, like, I'd say rarely these days is Reflector Mage just ending games, but it's unfun in the same kind of way Emrakul is, where it's just, like, it takes control of the game directly out of your hands.
And what I said in my video this week is, like, Emrakul was unfun because it was, like, oh, well, I guess I got Emrakul. And then, like, Reflector Mage was unfun because it was, like, I drew, like, you Reflector Mage this card, and then I drew a copy of that card.
Right.
And then I passed the turn, and it was, like... so stupid.
Right, you just lose... It just adds, like, you know, another kind of variance to the game that makes no sense for it to be a factor. Like, there's just no reason for the line of text past bounce to be there.
So, right? Who does this help?
I think two cards.
Okay, go ahead.
Mindrak Demon, because that card is the worst card to get Reflector Mage ever, because they Reflector Mage it into Gideon, and you lose the game. And Electrostatic Pummeler.
Okay, I have different things, okay. So this is very interesting. I have aggro decks at large, because, like, getting time-walked by a 2-3 on turn 3 is like pretty annoying for an aggro deck. And then I have ramp creatures. So we have pretty good ramp creatures in the form of like Dead Cap Cultivator and like Uvenwald Captive. And you basically just couldn't play those cards because you like play it on turn 2 and then or sometimes even Servant of the Conduit was like this huge risk because they like Reflector Mage and you're like, now I look stupid for keeping this hand.
That one of the big things in like green red Marvel especially is you'd like play a Vessel on 1 and then just hold up Vessel on 2 rather than playing a Servant like most of the time because you would lose the game on the tempo loss of getting it
exactly
Maged, which is just sort of like a weird thing to have happen. Like,
and one of the huge things that was a problem is like it's not fun that I can't play my 2 drop because it'll get Reflector Maged, but I also can't wait to play a 4 drop because it'll get Spellquellered.
It was this really awkward, like, it was just an awkward moment in time. So right. I'm happy that's over. But I think, like, aggro decks were actually okay against blue-white. I know that Sam Stoddard tweeted today that the only deck with a favorable matchup against blue-white coming in at 51% was red-black aggro.
Yeah, which is a very interesting stat considering our testing.
I mean, so I think it's like a lot of the better players on Magic Online gravitate towards blue-white. So
that's I tweeted.
I think they're like, I've heard this in Hearthstone before that when Patron Warrior got banned, its win rate was like 38%. So I think what you can have happen is like better players gravitate towards certain decks and worse players gravitate towards certain decks, and you can have win percentages like at large
be weird.
Get just like it's sure. Not necessarily a useful statistic. So I'm a little ambivalent about Wizards like really buying into like blue white has no bad matchups because that's just not true. But I don't think anyone's going to miss like
getting Reflector Mage. Yeah, I agree.
Well, and it's not like the single one Reflector Mage. It's like Siege Rhino, right? The first one is fine. The second one is like, oh my god. The third one is like, yep, concede, great.
And I think the Spellqueller kind of like
it doubled just, down on it, right?
Exactly.
It's just like, sure, yeah, this
and
is
the
happening.
Thing is,
to me.
It's like Spellqueller is actually not that annoying because you can just kill it, but like Reflector Mage actively makes it so you don't get to play Magic.
Yeah, I mean, Spellqueller is powerful, but, like, it can also be awkward. Like, sometimes trapping a removal spell under a Spellqueller is, like, actively terrible for
exactly.
you. So there's, like, real costs there in a way that Reflector Mage just doesn't have.
So I mean, how do you...
Yeah, I don't know.
How do you feel about these bans personally?
I am happy to see Wizards taking an active role in trying to make Magic fun for more people.
Okay.
I personally like them. I know that not everyone does, but I don't necessarily want it to be about that as much as I want to just say that I'm happy that, you know, Wizards listens to people, and if people say, I really don't like this, they say, well, ultimately we make this game for you.
It's so funny. I have a similar but opposite response.
Okay.
So, one, I actually love the bannings. I actually legitimately am very happy that they ban these cards. But I do believe it created a negative culture in Magic the way that I think that this is the same negative culture that ruined Modern. The reason that Modern is banned is because people just whined and cards got banned and banned and banned. And it was it's like a legitimate problem in Modern. I think that there are many, many cards on the ban list that just shouldn't be banned in Modern. And because of that, Modern sucks. When Modern is like actually so close to just being great. I worry that Standard will have, like, they're going to be like, the week one, oh, ban this card, Wizards, ban this card. And then, like, 5 weeks, you know, or I guess 7 weeks later, it will get banned. And I don't like that. I think that the Whiners really did win here. Did Smogger's Copter need to be banned? Probably not. Did Embercool need to be banned? Probably not. Did Reflector Mage need to be banned? Probably not. None of these cards needed to be banned. Is Magic better for them being banned? Probably, yeah. Magic is actually probably better for these cards just being gone and, like, we get a new format. And that's great. Does it encourage future bad behavior? Absolutely.
So, I agree with that to some extent. I just hope that, like, what Wizards is showing here is basically a level of humility and just, like, willingness to own mistakes and say, this isn't really what we envisioned when we made these cards.
Right.
Like, so I think what they're saying is we didn't envision Emrakul being this cheap or being this ubiquitous.
Sure.
We didn't envision Reflector Mage being a card that people played. And
at all.
We didn't really know how good Smuggler's Copter was going to be, and this was better than we hoped. So,
yeah,
you know, we're going to keep trying new things, and hopefully we'll do better in the future.
And when you look back at, like, the designer of Magic, Richard Garfield, he said, if you're not getting cards banned, you're not trying hard enough. And Wizards has, for a long time, had a very different philosophy than that. They do everything they can to never ban anything. They don't like bans, and they feel like it gives the feel-bads. And I think that what they have learned from specifically Hearthstone is that people will continue to play your game even if you nerf and ban the strategies.
What people want is they want a designer who's taking an active role in listening to issues. Yeah. And, you know, it...
Which brings us to our next point.
So it can be good or bad, but I know that specifically there was the Twitter poll that Sam Stoddard made a few weeks ago, where I don't believe any Platinum Pro rated Standard as over a 5 out of 10.
Yeah.
Which, so, you know, that says something.
It does. It does say something. And I think those are people that I definitely want to listen to. Which brings us to our next point, which is there's a new Standard ban window. So they now will do bannings on the Monday following the pre-release, as well as 5 weeks following the Pro Tour.
So I'm a little ambivalent about, like, the post-Pro Tour ban, but I like the idea of having more chances to fix formats.
Yeah, I think it does a couple of things. So, for example, this might be a direct correlation to this happening, but for example, we have the Saheeli Cat combo that's coming into Standard, and this gives them a chance to say, like, all right, can you guys beat this? Because if not... like, we're going to ban it.
My question, though, is how many Standard GPs are in that month? Like, because if the answer isn't, like, 3,
but you just won't know by 5 weeks after. The thing that we learned from this Standard banning is that they use Moto results a lot.
Which I think makes sense because just, like, Magic Online is the kind of game that... it's basically competitive REL practice.
Yeah.
It's not really like casual Haven. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So how do these bannings help us? I think that what you said earlier actually is exactly right, is that they can more easily listen to people and they can design more aggressively. Like, they can go hard in the paint and design because of the addition of this. Because
no one wants to see you, like, make a bunch of really bland sets where the mechanics aren't interesting and flavorful. Of course, you know, you hope that means you don't, you know, print 13 Mindslavers that cost like 2 or 3 less mana than you envisioned. But
and hopefully you don't ever print a 2/3 that's like the most unfun card ever, even though, like, why should this card be playable? This card's like actively bad.
Yeah, it's really close. It's really close. If it was a 4 mana 3/4, that card would literally have never been played in any format ever.
Yeah.
Outside of being probably pretty good and limited.
Yeah.
So it's... it's hard to say, like, no matter how you feel personally, I think you have to appreciate the fact that Wizards is trying. They're trying something. I know, you know, some people like Standard, some people really didn't like it, but it's hard for me to rag on someone for trying.
Yeah. I think that the way that it hurts us is those people that, like, created that negative culture in Modern. I hope that doesn't happen in Standard. I hope that every Pro Tour, they're not trying to call for bannings, and we can just have great formats.
It's about finding balance, right, between I mean, there are always going to be cards that are better than other cards, but there were things about these specific cards that I think kind of ticked the boxes that Wizards is looking for when they're looking at banning things.
All right, so let's wrap this up. So I think that what we learned is... everybody has different opinions about Magic and, like, what it should be like and what it should feel like. I know that, for example, Matt Kling and Casey Bloodworth basically told me that they basically hate playing Magic that's not on the stack. And for me, I love playing creature decks. I love mid-rangey creature decks. And I think that what needs to happen is we need to live in a world where everybody can get what they want. And that's a really hard world for Wizards to design. And having aggressive bans might be... a better way of achieving that. So yeah, that's it for this week. Let's move on to our Patreon goal. So next up, we did hit our goal again of an extra episode. So we'll do a Pro Tour testing episode where we'll specifically, I think what we'll do is we will bring in Danny and just me, you, and Danny will have a conversation about Pro Tour testing and where you guys are at and what we tested and things like that closer to the end of this month and where we're at the end of this month. And that will be right before an SCG, right after an SCG open.
I don't know the dates of the SCG. I'm pretty lost on.
Sure. Maybe we'll do two. Maybe we'll do one this month and one in February. When is the Pro Tour?
This feels like a question I should be able to answer. but I know that GP San Jose is like the 27th.
Right.
So the Pro Tour is like the Friday after that because I'm flying from San Jose.
So we'll do two with me, you, and Danny. I'll talk to Danny about it, you know, because I'm obviously volunteering him for an extra show.
But suck it up, Danny.
Haha, Danny. But yeah, we'll work something out so we can get like pre-Pro Tour, post-Pro Tour, like what where you guys are at and then what you guys played and what you guys thought, stuff like that. So go to patreon.com/ccmtg, donating $1 more per or month. $1 per month or more to be eligible for those episodes. You can also find us on Twitter. You can go find us at CCMTG. You can find me at Spencer13H on Twitter and Spencer Stephen Halland on Facebook. And yeah, if you want to join the clan, message me on MTGO at Spencer13Dev or Quinn at Earthstripe. That's URTHSTYRPE. You can also find Michael at...
You can find me on Facebook, Michael Handrocker. Feel free to tag me in anything in the Facebook group or... whatever. You can also find me on Twitter at MagicMikeMTG. And if you're going to be at a GP, come say hey. I got to talk to Mason Clark, and it was really awesome. Had a really good time. Really nice guy.
Awesome. You can also find the podcast every week on MTGcast.com and ConstructiveCriticism.com, as well as YouTube.com, which Mason actually posts the YouTube version of this. So.
Oh, sweet.
But yeah, let's see here. You can also join the conversation by going to the Constructive Criticism family, where if you are joining the family, make sure to tag Michael with at Michael and then call him Brother Michael of some kind. I don't care how you do it, but he loves that. So yeah, and then that should be it. Let's go to hashtag with him good. So every week on the show, why are you laughing?
No reason. Not at all.
No reason other than the fact that you said that you specifically didn't want that?
It's fine. Do what you will. I'll deal with it.
All right. So, let's go back.
I told Danny to suck it up. I'll do the same.
If only all my co-hosts had that feeling.
I mean, but if you want to make me a grilled cheese, like, you don't have to give it to Casey. If you give it to me, like, I'd be legitimately stoked about that, so...
Deep fried enchiladas, hashtag with a big good. Question mark? Yes, they are. That's from Agent of Blight. So how do you deep fry? Don't you like lose a lot of the part of an enchilada by deep frying it?
I have no idea.
Like, an enchilada is like covered in enchilada sauce.
Well, you can deep fry it and then cover it in enchilada sauce.
Oh, well, that seems good. That
or
seems
you can
fantastic.
Just deep fry the enchilada sauce and get that whole bad boy out of the fryer.
That seems worse.
I don't know.
I like your first
response. I've never tried it either way, but, you know, I have a deep fryer at home, so you never know.
At Spencer13H, at SylvanMTG, why would I want to win when I could win with style? Hashtag with a good. Hashtag spoiler, it's not. What is this in response to? Oh. Okay. So, real talk. I've been really active on Twitter lately. And SylvanMTG, I don't know who that is. I'm sure that they're a great person. Tweeted a picture of a Wooded Foothills Simian Spear Guide into Times 4 Burning Tree Emissary and Times 2 of the new Burning Tree Emissary that has Revolt that it gets you get 2 green and it makes 2 green mana. Okay, so
but you end with 2 green floating.
Yeah, so
this
here's
is really bothering me. Okay. What are you going to do with that mana?
So what I did is I tweeted, or you could just play Reckless Bushwhacker, which seems so much better.
Well, you should probably play them in like a different order, because if you have like green yeah, from the first one,
exactly.
And then,
so
yeah.
Like, and that's the thing. It's like you could play times two of this other free spell, and it's like, or you could not do that. Play them in a different order, and then a reckless bushwhacker them, and then they take 4, 5. So they take 3 times 5, which is 15, 16, 17 on turn two, or oh, on turn one, and then they easily die on turn two because like, how could they possibly win?
They play land, exile, simian, spirit guide, pyroclasm. Suck sure. it. Yeah.
Suck it! But yeah, I wasn't trying to be rude. I was just saying, like, you know, oftentimes people, like, go to these extremes
it's
and new cards
like
comes
a
out.
Weird
it's like,
draw.
Now, this is not even, like, close to, like, this deck already exists with better cards than
it's,
this.
It's just not an aesthetically pleasing nut draw.
Yeah.
If I'm going to make up nut draws, they should, like, you know, be better.
So I wasn't trying to be rude. I'm just saying, like, you could just have
come up with better 8-card hands.
There are 8-card hands that win on the spot.
Like a lot of them.
Yeah. New T-shirt campaign. Show you're at CCMTG Pride by wearing one of these bad boys. And yeah, you can go to just check it out. Go to teespring.com/new-constructed-criticism/shirt or new-constructed-criticism-shirt. Yeah, we have mugs available. We have shirts available. We have stickers available. I did say we would never do stickers on this show. There are, in fact, stickers available for constructive criticism. So check it out if you want the
link. I
want
to see more mug colors. I don't know if I...
I mean, there's just the mono white mug.
Is that the Craig Wesco mug?
What do you want from me?
Oh, just give you a hard
buy
time.
Buy you one of these for Christmas.
Well, it's past Christmas.
I know, but I was
also
gonna
don't
buy
me Christmas gifts.
I was gonna buy you one.
Okay.
Shut up. I hate you. yeah, go to check out my tweet. You can also just if you want the link. The shirts are as cheap as they could possibly be, and we had a lot of people asking for them, so there's still a lot of time. There's still like 10 days basically to get these shirts. So check it out. You can also get mugs, stickers, whatever you want. Well, with the cash that I won from the Game Grid Invitational, I will now be attending GP San Jose. Who am I going to meet? Hashtag would that be good. Yeah, I'm going to GP San Jose. I don't usually go to GPs, as you guys can tell on this podcast. And I'm really excited about it. And I'm going to go with Danny and Alex and Michael. And yeah. Would it be good? Do you want me to come?
The shrug was kind of a dagger. You're like, and Michael shrug.
Wait, are you... It's like the physical shrug they couldn't see.
Yeah. It was like Danny and Alex and Michael.
That's not what happened.
That's what it sounded like to me, but, you know.
All right. So, real talk. Should I cancel my flight? Are you not excited about me going?
Well, I don't know. You didn't seem excited about me going. Maybe I should cancel my flight.
I'm pretty excited about it. I think I've gone to one limited GP. It was in Salt Lake City, and it was the first time that I got a pro point. And
can you call it going to a limited GP when it's in your city?
Yeah. No, you can't.
I mean, by going to, I mean like I drove 5 minutes to it.
Kari Zev's expertise in modern. Gruul Blitz sideboard. Hashtag, would that be good? I think this card is great.
Is that the one that lets you casts a 2-drop?
Yeah.
Yeah. That seems like kind of powerful.
Seems like broken.
All the expertise is we're brewing some ridiculous stuff.
So I have a question. Can you play 5-color expertise?
So
can
you
go expertise into expertise into expertise into expertise?
You want my worst/best idea for a deck yet?
Go.
Okay. So you like play a mana dork on whatever turn, and then on turn 4 you cast Verdurous Gearhulk. You put all its counters on itself. And then on turn 5, you cast the one that draws 8 cards.
Okay.
And then you put into play the blue one to bounce their board.
Okay.
And then, I don't know, you cast literally anything and your opponent concedes out of shame.
Yeah, so why did you do that? Because then the next one is the one that gets -3/-3?
Well, we could kill anything that was left over with that one.
Sure.
I mean,
our
Verdurous Gearhulk is like an 87-87.
Sure. Okay.
And then we can untap and probably do it all over again because we drew like 11 cards.
I see how you do. Okay. No, actually, I think this card might be totally modern playable. I have no idea. I think this card is legitimately great. Having 15 one-ofs in your legacy sideboard, hashtag, would that be good? Hashtag, Phyrexia did nothing wrong. This is 13 hours ago, so this is right before the banning was announced? So did he know the future?
Apparently. Just a gut feeling, probably.
Yeah, so I've played a lot of 15 one-off sideboards, and I have no shame in that.
I don't know. I got to play a black-bordered Red Elemental Blast this weekend, so that was my, you know, good one-off.
When you cast it, did you say boom?
Because
if you did, you owe me a nickel.
I said blast. But no, I didn't. I didn't say anything when I cast it. I just pointed, usually.
At Kiora's follower says, everyone is talking about the standard bans, and I'm over here like, Probe and Gravetrol got banned in Modern. Hashtag, would that be good? Yeah, I think that we are both happy with the Modern bans.
Yeah, I think it's just good for the format.
Yeah,
like,
just I think just like we said when Splendor was banned, we do wish that there were unbannings, but like, whatever. Dear like, Wizards of the Coast, is there... Oh, go ahead.
They could just unban everything. Or, except Mental Misstep, because Mental Misstep is just a miserable excuse for a magic card.
Dear Wizards of the Coast, is there anything we can... Is there any way we can go back in time and have Reality Hemorrhage deal 3 damage? Hashtag MDG, hashtag with it good. I actually don't understand. It was so funny. I saw a tweet today that was like... That was talking about the standard ban. So like, this is like a lot of work to just avoid printing Lightning Strike.
Yeah, I saw that too. That was funny.
I was like, yeah. It's just like true. So much work to avoid printing Lightning Strike.
So I think Wizards got like terrified by that really brief window where Mono Red like won every Pro Tour, and then it had Searing Blood and Abbot of Carol Keep and was the best deck by so much that it made Jace unplayable. And they're just like,
but they also printed Jace in the same like time frame as Searing Blood.
Yeah, I think sometimes it just like the connections between cards and how it affects the metagame doesn't quite sink in until it's too late. Which makes sense given that it's not that many people testing.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, they... I sort of agree with this. You don't want Mono Red to be the best deck, generally. I think that's not generally their goal, and my guess is that that more players than not would prefer that Mono Red not be the best deck. So, I mean, the flip side, though, is they've gone a little bit, like, gung-ho on just not printing red cards with text.
Right. I mean, they avoided printing Shock for a very long time before today.
But, like, Shock is horrible. If I have to play Shock in a deck, I don't know.
But they, like, tried to make 2-mana Shock happen for, like, legitimately a year.
Yeah, if it's not Sudden Shock, I'm not interested. Yeah. Like, if I have to play Shock in a deck, I'm going to buy a Cattle Prod and use it on myself every time I cast it.
All right, well, that was aggressive. Hopefully, we can see some aggressive decks come out of this next format. That's it for this week. Go check out our sponsor at OasisGamesSC.com. Go to patreon.com/CCMTG to support shows like this. You can also check out our YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com/C/constructed_criticism.
Yeah, do it.
Which is so funny that like we had to get a certain number of subscribers just to get that instead of like -4-3.
You can also watch our second podcast, the Sneak and Show podcast, brought to you by me and Casey.
Oh, that's true. If you go to youtube.com, you can see a 45-minute deck tech on Sneak and Show.
47 minutes.
Which is a great story behind the scenes. So thank you everybody for listening, and we'll see you guys all next week.
See ya. Magic, magic, magic.